this sucker and see if it'll stay airborne. Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. We're going to do something a little bit different tonight. A lot of talk about the Koch brothers, these proto-fascists. Oh, my goodness. Do you really know anything about the Koch brothers? Do you? Huh? I learned a lot today simply by reading a piece written by Yasha Levine in April, a year ago, at Alternet. And it's a rather lengthy article. I'm not going to do the whole thing, but I want to do part of it for you because this will give you an idea of how filthy these bastards are, these Koch brothers, the ones that are financing everything evil and ugly about this country right now. So let me begin. Yasha Levine writes, the Tea Party movement's dirty little secret is that its chief financial backers owe their family fortune to the granddaddy of all their hatred, Stalin. Stalin's godless empire of the USSR. See, I told you you would find this interesting. The secretive oil billionaires, Yasha writes, of the Koch family, the main supporters of the right-wing groups that orchestrated the Tea Party movement, would not have the means to bankroll their favorite causes had it not been for the pile of money the family made working for the Bolsheviks in the late 1920s and early 1930s, building refineries, training communist engineers, and laying down the foundations of Soviet oil infrastructure. Ah! Really? Who'd have thunk it? The comrades were good to the Kochs. Today, Koch Industries has grown into the second largest private company in America with an annual revenue of $100 billion. Ownership is kept strictly in the family, with the company being split roughly between brothers Charles and David, who are worth about $20 billion apiece and are infamous as the largest sponsors of right-wing causes. They bankroll scores of so-called free market and libertarian think tanks, institutes, and advocacy groups. Greenpeace estimates that the Koch family shelled out $25 million from 2005 to 2008, funding the climate denial machine, which means they outspent ExxonMobil 3-1. But the Tea Party movement and the Koch family's obscene wealth go back more than half a century, all the way to Grandpa Frederick C. Koch, one of the founding members of the far-right John Birch Society, which was convinced that socialism was taking over America through unions, colored people, Jews, homosexuals, the Kennedys, and even Dwight David Eisenhower. Bah! Here's an historical fact, one that the Kochs don't like to repeat in public. The family's initial wealth was not created by the harsh creative forces of unfettered capitalism. You know, bootstraps and all that. No. But by the grace of the centrally planned economy of the Soviet Union. The Koch family, America's biggest pushers of the free market Tea Party revolution, would not be the billionaires they are today were it not for the whim of one of Stalin's comrades. The story of how the Koch family amassed its socialist wealth starts at the turn of the 20th century with the birth of Frederick C. Koch. Fred was born in a tiny North Texas town to a Dutch immigrant and newspaper publisher. The historical record is not clear about the family's wealth, but it appears that great-granddaddy Koch was not hurting for cash because Fred Koch turned out to be a smart kid and was able to study in MIT and graduate with a degree in chemical engineering. A few years later, in 1925, Fred started up the Winkler Koch Engineering Company with a former classmate, quickly developing and patenting a novel process to refine gasoline from crude oil that had a higher yield than anything on the market. It was shaping up to be an American success story, where anything was possible with a bit of elbow grease and good old ingenuity. Yeah, the sky was the limit. Until the free market rained on Fred's parade. See, Fred was living through the Roaring Twenties, a time of big business, heavy speculation, and zero government regulation. Much like today, cartels were free to form and free to fix, and so they did. Sensing a threat to their royalty revenue stream from Winkler Coke's superior refining technology, the reigning oil cartel moved in to teach the young Coke how the laissez-faire business model worked in the real world. According to Hoover's company records service, quote, when he tried to market his invention, the major oil companies sued him for patent infringement. Coke eventually won the lawsuits after 15 years in court, but the controversy made it tough to attract U.S. customers. And just like that, Winkler Coke Engineering found itself squeezed out of the American market. They had a superior product at a cheaper price, but no one to sell it to. Luckily, there was one market where opportunity beckoned and innovation was rewarded. The Soviet Union! Stalin's first five-year plan was just kicking into action. A nationwide industrialization effort, and Soviet planners needed smart industrious college grads like Fred. The Soviet Union was desperately trying to increase its oil refining capacity. So oil engineers were especially in high demand and well-paid. In 1929, after hosting a delegation of Soviet planners in Wichita, Kansas, Winkler and Koch signed a $5 million contract, back when that was money, to build 15 refineries in the Soviet Union. According to Oil of Russia, a Russian oil industry trade magazine, the deal made Winkler Koch into Comrade Stalin's number one refinery builder. Woo! At the time, the Soviet Union's oil industry was a total mess. Equipment built by Western engineering firms was always breaking down or didn't work at all. Western engineers were constantly being accused of espionage or sabotage, real or imagined, and booted out of the country. Soviet workers suspected of colluding with the foreigners were simply taken out back and shot. Winkler Coke made sure it was running a tight, efficient operation. Unlike his Western competition, Coke pleased his Soviet clients by ensuring top quality and helping the cause of Soviet communism. The Soviet oil planners were delighted with Coke's refineries. The communists were so impressed, they kept giving Winkler Coke business and regularly sent Soviet engineers to train in Wichita. It was a sign of growing mutual trust. By the time he got out in 1933, Coke earned $500,000, which was a ton of money for a kid fresh out of college. This little nut of money served as the foundation for the family's future assets, which Coke no doubt started acquiring at rock-bottom prices. After all, 1933 was one of the two worst years of the Great Depression. All assets were priced to go at 90% off. In the end, the capitalist-hating socialists ended up treating Coke way better than the monopolistic thrashing he got from his native land. So, you'd think he'd at least say something good about the Soviet Union when he got home. Well, stick around and I'll give you the rest of the story. And by the way, this first hour is sponsored by Christopher Olette Croucher. This hour brought to you by the Hell Socialists in the Molloy Chat, announcing Sea Shepherd's victory in the Southern Ocean. It's official. The Japanese whaling fleet has called it quits in the Southern Ocean, at least for this season. Go to seashepherd.org for more news and updates. Thank you, Christopher Olette Croucher and the Hell Socialists in the Molloy chat room. Ta-da! We'll be right back.
Don't do it.
hour, we're talking about how the Koch brothers, those great free marketeers, pulled themselves up with their bootstraps and built such a huge fortune building the oil infrastructure of the Soviet Union back in the 20s and 30s. Anyway, so we're talking about Fred Koch, who was the grandpa of these two freaks that now use the money to poison the political atmosphere in this country and the environment, by the way. But Fred Koch, right? He got his degree from MIT, developed a way of refining oil into gasoline that I would imagine the Rockefeller family didn't want anything to do with when they owned Standard Oil in New Jersey. So poor old Fred had to find someplace to sell it. And what? The commies, the Soviets, Stalin said, yeah, we'll take it. So the Koch family, in addition to trying to destroy America today, did their share in trying to destroy America and set the stage for 50-year-long Cold War between the United States and the Soviet Union back in the 20s and 30s. Isn't that... No, I guess it's not a surprise, is it? Traitorous sons of bitches. Anyway, you would think that after building the fortune, that old Fred Koch would have something good to say about the Soviet Union when he got home. Nope, not at all. He hated the commies. For some reason, he kept it to himself until the late 1950s. And that was because he was still doing business with the Soviet Union. Just like the Bush family did business with the Nazis and Hitler, the Koch family did business with the communists and Stalin. Ain't that a bitch? I mean, doesn't that just set your teeth on edge, huh? These great American patriots, the Bush family, the great American patriot, the Koch family, financing, building infrastructure for the two great enemies of the United States in the 20th century. Son of a bitch! Let us pause for a moment and consider the traitorous actions of the Bushes and the Kochs. Okay, that's long enough. After coming back from a trip to the Soviet Union in 1956, he flew off the handle. According to a 1956 Associated Press article, Fred Koch was among 11 prominent residents of Wichita, Kansas, who traveled to Moscow, quote, in an effort to convince the Russian people that Soviet propaganda about capitalists is untrue, end quote. Of course, that sounds like the perfect cover for a business trip. It's not clear what he was actually doing there. According to Yasha Levine, who wrote this at Alternet a year ago. Not clear what he's actually doing there, but whatever the outcome, maybe he didn't get the contract he was expecting, or maybe he got swindled out of some investment, or maybe he just hated the thaw of post-Stalin Russia. Don't forget, Stalin died in 1953. And all of a sudden, the secret police and everything was starting to dissolve. That was anathema to freaks like the Koch brothers and the Bush family. They love totalitarianism. Right wing, left wing, they don't give a goddamn. Just give it to us! Totalitarianism, yes! Fred Koch came back a pissed off anti-communist and joined up with the right wing Birchers. He bankrolled a John Birch Society chapter in Wichita and attempted to open a Bircher bookstore, which wasn't too popular and had to close. He warned of a massive communist conspiracy to take control of America. Woo! Saying that the Reds were eroding American universities, churches, political parties, the media, and every branch of government. In a speech to a Woman's Republican Club in 1961, Koch said, quote, maybe you don't want to be controversial by getting mixed up in this anti-communist battle, but you won't be very controversial lying in a ditch with a bullet in your brain. End quote. My God, it sounds like, yes, it does. It sounds like Glenn Beck. Fred Koch's paranoia continued to spiral out of control until his ticker quit in 1967. Boom. But by that time, his son Charles had already taken over control of the family business. He appropriated his father's communist paranoia and made it the basis of the family's free market business philosophy. Charles had big plans for Koch Industries. Oh, he was going to push the limits of corporate growth by plowing 90% of the company's profits back into the till and diversifying to the max. It worked. The company expanded at an unreal rate. Its revenues increased from $100 million in 1966 to $100 billion in 2008. That's a 1,000-fold growth. Now, you may be asking yourself, Truth Seeker,
well, how did he do that, Mike?
Yasha Levine has the answer, and I'll share it with you when we come back. How did the Koch family do it? I mean, it sounds so Horatio Alger, doesn't it? So bootstrappy, doesn't it? Woo! $100 million in 1966 and $100 billion in 2008. OMFG, how did he do it?
Why must we stay? It's gonna be a delicacy. So lift your chops and eat the meat.
It's more Mike Malloy.
All right, this hour is sponsored by Christopher Olette Croucher. He has a message. This hour brought to you, really, by the Hell Socialists in the Malloy chat room, announcing Sea Shepherd's victory in the Southern Ocean. It's official. The Japanese whaling fleet has called it quits in the Southern Ocean, at least for the season. Go to seashepherd.org for more news and updates. The Hell Socialists in the Malloy chat room, huh? All right, we're talking about the Koch brothers and how they made their fortune and became the great, stinking, filthy capitalists that they are. Not unlike the Bush family and so many right-wing families in this country over the history of this sad nation, especially in the past 100 years, these massive right-wing capitalists made their money by aligning themselves with America's enemies over and over and over again. The Bush family with Hitler, the Koch family with Stalin, over and over again. And if we have time tonight, I'll tell you about Dick Cheney's alignment with Muammar Gaddafi in Libya. Oh, and his alignment with Iran, with Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Always these right-wingers. They talk about their twisted sense of patriotism, and they do everything they can to undermine and destroy this country. In a different society, they would be put on trial for treason, found guilty, and dealt with. But not here. Oh, no. How did the Koch brothers get their money? Well, today, the Koch operation operates thousands of miles of pipelines in the United States. It refines 800,000 barrels of crude oil daily. It buys and sells the most asphalt in the nation. It is among the top 10 cattle producers, among the 50 largest landowners. Koch Industries also poured hundreds of millions of dollars into right-wing organizations like the Institute for Humane Studies, the Cato Institute, the Mercatus Center at George Mason University, the Bill of Rights Institute, the Reason Foundation, Citizens for a Sound Economy, and the Federalist Society, all of them promoting the usual billionaire-friendly ideas of the free market, deregulation, smaller government. Now, if that expansion from $100 million in 1966 to $100 billion in 2008. If that looks too fast to be legit, that's because it was. And again, thanks to Yasha Levine for doing the research and posting this at alternet.org a year ago. William Koch, The third brother, who had a falling out with Charles and David back in the 80s over Charles' sociopathic management style, William Koch, appeared on 60 Minutes in November 2000 to tell the world that Koch Industries was a criminal enterprise. What? It was, he said. It was my family company. I was out of it, but that's what appalled me so much. I did not want my family, my legacy, my father's legacy, to be based upon organized crime, end quote. What? What? Charles Koch's racket was very simple, explained William. With its extensive oil pipe network, Koch Industries' role as an oil middleman, you see, it buys crude from someone else's wells and sells it to a refinery. That role makes it easy to steal millions of dollars worth of oil by skimming just a little bit off the top of each transaction, or what they call cheating measurements in the oil trade. According to William Koch, the brother, wells located on federal land and Native American lands were the prime targets of the Koch scam. Why, of course. Of course. Who's paying attention? Bill Koch said, quote, what the family company was doing was taking all these measurements and then falsifying them on the run sheets. If the dipstick measured 5 feet 10.5 inches, they would write down 5 feet 9.5 inches. That may not sound like much, but Bill Koch said it added up. He said, quote, well, that was the beauty of the scheme, because if they're buying oil from 50,000 different people and they're stealing 2 barrels from each person, what does that add up to? One year, their data showed they stole 1.5 million barrels of oil, end quote, William Koch. A year before making these revelations, in 1999, William decided to take his brothers down. He sued Koch Industries in civil court under the False Claims Act, which allows whistleblowers to file suit on behalf of the federal government. William Koch accused the family company of stealing hundreds of millions of dollars in oil from federal lands. But the band of brothers settled the case 2 years later, with Charles agreeing to pay $25 million in penalties to the federal government to have the suit dismissed. Turned out to be a good deal for Charles and David, considering that in the 1980s, their so-called adjustments allowed Koch Industries to siphon off 300 million gallons of oil without paying. It was pure profit. Free money to the tune of $230 million. At the trial, 50 former Koch gaugers, people who took the measurements, testified against the company. 50. Some in video depositions. They said employees even had a term for cheating on the measurements. One of the gaugers, Mark Wilson, said, quote, we in the company referred to it as the Koch method, because it was a system for cheating the producer out of his oil. End quote. Finally, we have discovered the secret to the family's success. At the bottom of it all is the Koch method that funds all these right-wing sharks and cockroaches. What was it? Nothing but good old-fashioned theft. Ah, yes, sons of bitches. You filthy pigs. And they'll do it tomorrow. And next week. And next year. And you know why? Because the governments of the United States, Democrat and Republican, don't care. They don't care. And there's not a goddamn thing you and I can do about it. Well, there is, but it would probably put us in jail for a long time. You don't mess with capitalist thieves like this. You don't. Ever. But keep in mind, and you grubby little teabag bastards out there who listen to this program, I'm sure you're sitting there going, ah, well, that Yasha Levine, what was she, a Jew? the woman who wrote the story, or is Yasha a man? I don't know. Is it Yasha? I am always surprised, and I don't know why, at this stage in my life when I've been around as long as I have, I don't know why it still surprises me, to find out that every single filthy right-wing millionaire, billionaire, multi-billionaire who funds any and all organizations in an attempt to reduce this country to feudalism for sport, these filthy cockroaches can't make any more money. If they started spending $1 million a day, they would die before they even made a dent in their wealth and their massive fortune. They do it for sport. But every single time, I don't know why this still surprised me, you find out that as they built their fortune, they did it with the sworn, avowed enemies of the United States. These are traitors, treasonous bastards. Every last one of them. And so they take their money and they feed it to some dolt like who is the former congressman who set up a Freedom Works. Freedom Works! And they fund every stinking right-wing organization they can locate. They put money into this psychopathic Michelle Bachmann, into this crazy son of a bitch who now runs Wisconsin, over and over, and John Kasich and every single right-winger. Scratch the surface and you find Coke money. So the Koch brothers worked their Midwestern asses off back in the 20s and 30s to make sure that we had an enemy for 60 long years. It was called the Cold War. And every single American that died fighting the proxy wars, every single American that came home with half of his brain blown away, how many hundreds of thousands were there? You can thank the Koch brothers.
One little problem that confronts you. Got a monkey on your back. Just one little fix, Lord, might do the trick. One hell of a price for you to get your kicks. Ooh, that smell. Can't you smell that smell?
For the hour, and this answer, this answer, you know, when you spend time, well, somebody else's research, but reading about the Koch family and find out what nasty sons of bitches they really are and how much they have done over the past 70 years to destroy America, it's just astonishing to me, astonishing that they're still walking free. I don't know. This is a sick society. I mean, when you have people like the Bush family and the Koch family that can consort with, fund, finance, build, and provide the wherewithal to commit mass murder all over the planet, with our enemies. I mean, the United States has murdered enough people in our wars of opportunity, but for these filthy cockroaches to finance Hitler and to finance the Stalin, have they no shame? Of course not. It's all about the money. So you teabaggers that think you are so pro-America, you know, chanting your little Second Amendment tripe, just remember who funds you, who created you. Do you think you just spontaneously leaped out of somebody's rib cage? You were created by the Koch brothers, and the Koch brothers used their money that they made funding, financing, and helping to build the Soviet Union, which in turn used the Koch brothers' technology to murder, maim, kill, suppress, imprison, degrade half the goddamn human race. But you don't care, do you, you teabag freaks? You don't care. You ignorant savages, you just don't care. Your worldview stops at the end of your goddamn noses. Wow. I think I'm pissed off. Thanks to Christopher Ouellette Croucher and the Hell Socialists in the Malloy chat room for sponsoring this hour. Their message, Sea Shepherd's victory in the Southern Ocean. It's official, the Japanese whaling fleet has called it quits in the Southern Ocean, at least for this season. If you want more news and updates, go to seashepherd.org. Oh, and Sasha Levine, who wrote that investigative piece, is male, not female. Does anybody care? I mean, other than the progressives or liberals or whatever the hell we call ourselves now that listen to this program, the 36 listeners that we have, does anybody out there really care that these huge fortunes and this manipulation of our system, you know, it was set up to give these monsters plenty of freedom. Monsters like the Bush family, monsters like this walking dead man, Dick Cheney, monsters like Henry Kissinger, monsters like the Koch brothers, just all the freedom they could possibly want while they go about the business of stealing everybody else's. So the Koch brothers, they fund and support and build the mighty industrial engine of the Soviet Union. And then they steal from American oil producers. They steal. They're thieves. They don't steal from the rich and give to the poor. They steal from the rich and give to themselves. They're thieves. Stinking, filthy, two-bit punk thieves who happen to steal an incredible amount of money. I wonder if anybody in the Koch family, I don't know how many members there are, a lot of them. I bet there's all kinds of nieces and nephews and grandchildren and cousins and uncles and brothers and sisters. I wonder if one of them ever goes to bed at night and thinks for a second, gee, let me think, where Uncle, was it Frederick? Where Uncle, was it Frederick? Where he got his fortune. He worked with the Soviet Union. He built up their oil refining capacity. So that the people of Hungary and Romania and Czechoslovakia and Poland and on and on and on and all the stands could be crushed by the mighty Soviet military machine. Well, of course, we were doing our own crushing. What a game. What a miserable, demonic game that capitalists play. I wonder if George W. Bush, well, not him, but I wonder if Jeb Bush ever went to bed and laid there thinking to himself, our family actually financed Hitler? Fred Koch. Yeah, it was Freddie. Freddie the Koch. And of course, you, gentle listener, if you go to the nearest convenience store and steal some Coca-Cola and a bag of chips, your ass is going to go to jail. Stick around, another hour coming up. I'm Mike Malloy. This hour of the Malloy program is brought to you by Christopher Keller. He is our sponsor this hour. He has a message. It is this. The tax base in this country has been destroyed over the past 30 years, and this country will be bankrupt in another 30. Wages have been depressed with shrinking private sector union membership, and jobs have been sent overseas. All this further shrinks the tax base. What is happening in Wisconsin is unfortunate but inevitable. Christopher Keller is our sponsor this hour. You want to hear some more anti-woman Republican madness? I realize that a lot of this, when I bring it up, is preaching to the choir, because most conservatives, right-wingers, teabaggers are terrified to listen to this program. I make them pee all over themselves. But in case some of you scum are listening, what do you think about this? This is from here in Georgia, a Georgia representative, Georgia state representative. He will probably get elected to Congress in the 2012 election because of what I'm going to tell you, that he has a piece of legislation he wants to introduce. Let me ask you a question. Do you think a full investigation is necessary when a woman miscarries to make sure that she didn't actually purposefully try to induce an abortion? You don't think so, Kathy? We had two abortions. We had two miscarriages. We had four miscarriages before Molly? Okay. This is from the blog site Joe My God. Not only does wackadoodle Georgia State Rep Bobby Franklin want abortion classified as murder, but according to the latest bill he wants to introduce here in the Georgia Nut House, the police will have to investigate all miscarriages to ensure that they were spontaneous. He wants to create a uterus police to investigate miscarriages and require that any time a miscarriage occurs, whether in a hospital, or without medical assistance, it must be reported and a fetal death certificate issued. If the cause of death is unknown, it must be investigated. If the woman can't tell how it happened, then the uterus police can ask family members and friends how it happened. Hospitals are required to keep records of anyone who has a spontaneous abortion, that's a miscarriage, and report it. If you've been waiting for someone to suggest this, this half-wit son of a bitch here in Georgia, State Rep. Bobby Franklin, has done it. Now, needless to say, there are no exceptions allowed. Not for rape victims, not for incest victims, not to save the life and health of the mother. Blah, 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 blah. One in three pregnancies end in miscarriage. That is a vital statistic. And via Daily Coast, to the person who wrote this, the following. As a woman who miscarried in the fall of 2009, I cannot tell you how utterly disgusted by the thought that someone would even consider proposing such a bill. Many women after miscarriage already blame themselves, wondering if they had done something wrong that accidentally caused them to lose a very wanted child. This bill would treat every woman as a potential criminal at a time when they are already at their most emotionally vulnerable. But that's just another day in the war against women by the country's Republican Party. I don't know anything about this piece of human fecal material, this Georgia State Representative Bobby Franklin. Bobby. I'll bet you anything, though, he's a Baptist. Huh? Jesus, God, where do these people come from? I mean, this is, it's not going to stop, right? It's not going to say, you had a miscarriage? Get the police over here. Spread them. Let me take a look. Edie in Atlanta sent me an email here about TJ. It was a caller last night from Wisconsin. Remember, I think she was the last caller, wasn't she, Kathy? Edie writes, Mike, your caller from Wisconsin, TJ, filled me with sadness and hope. Hope because she is a voice of the real people in her state. Today there was protesting in Ohio. Bring it. Power to the people. Regarding the New York Times story of how they obeyed their government masters, the New York Times, and withheld the story of the CIA murderer killing at least two in Pakistan. I'm not surprised. James Risen, a reporter for the New York Times, had the story of the illegal wiretapping of Americans by the Bush administration a year before the 2004 presidential election. The New York Times held back that story at the request of the White House. A building that speaks until after the election. I canceled my subscription, and from that day to this, have not spent one dime to read the New York Times. I'm old, disabled, and poor. However, I'm not stupid. I, with the help of my daughter, dragged my dragged my blankety blank to the poll, held my nose, and voted for Kerry. Blank them all. I'll never do it again. Good luck to you and all our fellow truth seekers. We do live in interesting times. It's too blankety-blank bad our president is such a coward. Ooh, Edie! Man, this woman cusses almost as much as I do. Yow! I love it. From Sally in Santa Fe. Mike, just wanted to report we had a fine noon rally in Santa Fe. At least 700 people showed up, which is great for Santa Fe. This was a Stand with Wisconsin rally in Santa Fe, New Mexico today. Very angry crowd, great solidarity. The Firemen's Union was there along with the teachers and others. The legislature was in session and the crowd was very loud. Workers of the world, unite, Sally. What other little gems do I have here? We were talking about Curveball, who lives in Germany now and may be put on trial for warmongering, which is a crime in Germany because of the lies he told that were to the German intelligence services, which immediately passed it on to the American intelligence services, which passed it on to Cheney and Bush and the rest of these vampiric bastards who then proceeded to murder a million people. Curveball. We were talking about it the other night. Mary writes, Mike, you will remember that Judith Miller of the New York Times and Ahmed Shalabi told all those lies in the New York Times series that she did, Judith Miller did, about the weapons of mass destruction. This plan by Bush and Cheney covered all the bases with liars. They deserve credit. And both were finally discredited. Mary. I can't get over that bit about the Koch brothers. I really can't. All right, we'll take a break and come back and take some phone calls. You want to call in? All right, the number is 877-996-2556.
Can't depend on the goodly hearted. Goodly hearted made lampshades and soap. Can't depend on the sacrament. No father, no.
Ready to fight. Why do I lose dreams?
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
Why must we stay?
Past the hour. You know, I don't know how much attention Yasha Levine's article got when it first came out about the Tea Party financiers owe their fortune to Joseph Stalin, the connection between the Koch family and the totalitarian communists. And how much the Koch family contributed to the establishment of the might of the Soviet Union. I mean, it was just astonishing, this stuff. Just astonishing. I don't know how much publicity the article got, but I hope the people in the Malloy chat room will, who have the link to the original story. Well, not to the original story. It also was picked up by Truthdig. But get it out. Get the story out. Let people know. I mean, why not? Letter from Matt in St. Louis. Mike, you're the one radio host I really look forward to listening to at night. I listen in the kitchen on Sirius. Everyone should go to the Craigslist Wichita rant and rave section and post the anti-Coke information there. What is another $1 billion to someone who has everything? Another billion doesn't mean their power or influence is strengthened at all. There's a threshold, and that's a big lie in capitalism. Once you have so much, the rest is really useless. Withholding from the poor. Tax cuts are just bribes to the powerful. Bribes. That's it. Unreal. Matt St. Louis. Man. Okay, anything else here? Um, Yeah, Michael in Roswell sent this in a couple of days ago regarding what's going on in Wisconsin. It was stated on Dylan Radigan's radio show or television show that fees to Wall Street eat up over 15% of Wisconsin's pension fund, state pension fund revenues every year. 15% goes to the predators on Wall Street. Michael added, I don't believe for a second that the pension fund is the cause of the state's budgetary problems, but hell, if it were, wouldn't those fees be a good place to start trimming?
Yeah, yeah, it would, Michael. It really would, wouldn't it?
Michael is sometimes auditions for stand-up comedy. Start with the fees paid to Wall Street? Yeah, okay. Dave is in Chicago. Hey, Dave. Here you have a new mayor, don't you?
Yeah, fabulous.
Rahm Emanuel.
Well, it's not my choice, but at least we can shove it down the throats of the right wingers.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, at least we can do that. But I'm driving back right now from Madison, Wisconsin, where I speechified inside the rotunda of Capitol building just hours ago. I was there Sunday and did some speechifying, but it was a very light crowd on Sunday, and I did okay, and I gave them an idea for more so that they could get more publicity, and instead it's nailing several birds with one stone. If you hold Bush and Cheney responsible for... Oops. Are you Mike?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I heard something.
No.
If you hold Cheney responsible for all the things that we're going through in this country, start at the top and use what I call trickle-down responsibility. In fact, I said it in the speech.
Trickle-down responsibility.
Trickle-down responsibility. If you try to start from the bottom and hold your local congressman, accountable for everything, it's going to take a long time to get to the top. But if you start at the top and work your way down, you're going to scare the hell out of them. I put it up on my YouTube site, and we've talked about it before, previous phone calls that I've made to you.
Uh-huh.
Dave Rohde, 2004 on YouTube. Dave Rohde, 2004. I just uploaded it, and you can actually see my speech hours ago in that.
All right. Spell it out. What is the YouTube site?
Dave Rohde, DaveRoade, 2004.
Dave Rohde, 2004. Okay.
Right. And so I told him, if you start with Bush and Cheney and work your way down, Scott Walker's going to have the crap scared out of him.
That's...
And you're going to be able to hold him accountable, too. And it went very well. It was very well received. It got a great rousing support.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to be there tomorrow and the next day and the next day, possibly Saturday, too, and deliver the same speech with the crowd every night, obviously. You know. And if folks want to take a look at this thing, it's a great idea. They've got... arrest warrant for Bush and Cheney in Brattleboro, Vermont, and New Salem, Oregon. And so I'm telling these people, hey, you want to get some publicity?
Dave.
Arrest warrants right out of Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah, Dave, hold on a second. Hold on a second.
Done right from the left. It's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. Sorry if we blew out the speakers in your listening device. This hour sponsored by Christopher Keller. He's got a message. The tax base of this country has been destroyed over the past 30 years, and this country will be bankrupt in another 30. Wages have been depressed with shrinking private sector union membership, and jobs have been sent overseas. All this further shrinks the tax base, What is happening in Wisconsin is unfortunate, Christopher writes, but inevitable. All right, back to Dave in Chicago. Where were we, Dave? We were just about out of time, but I think he had something else to say.
No, I understand. Yeah, so I'm on my way back from Madison where I gave a speech tonight, and
right.
I left them with a piece of advice. I said, you guys need more publicity. A way to do that, and you can walk and chew gum at the same time, the way to do that is to demand arrest warrants right here in Madison, Wisconsin for Bush and Cheney. If you do that, you'll be generating publicity and creating news. You got to create more news than you guys are creating. Because I'm asking people in Chicago, do you know what's going on in Madison, Wisconsin? And people just give me a blank look. I told them, you guys need more publicity. This is a way to do it. It was very well received.
Wait a minute. Who doesn't know what's going on in Madison?
Everybody I asked. My own daughter. My daughter is going to be 29 in August this year. What's going on in Madison, Wisconsin? I have no idea, Dad. You know, I said, well, I was there for the speechifying on Sunday night, and I've got it up on my YouTube page. You can watch Daddy, talking to people. Everybody I talked to in Chicago has no idea what's going on.
That just seems impossible. Chicago, people live in Chicago are pretty aware of this, or at least they were when I lived there.
I understand, Mike. I'm telling you, they need more pub. One way to do it? Try to get the Madison police to crank out arrest warrants for Bush and Cheney. You will get a mountain of publicity.
Well,
they need it.
I hope somebody will take that advice. Hey,
yeah,
thanks, man. All right,
Okay.
It's Dave Rohde 2004 at YouTube.
Right.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, Dave. Take care.
Thanks, Mike.
All right. Keep it lit. I have to say that to Dave because, you know, I don't know why I have to say it, but this felt like it was the appropriate thing to say, right? Indiana Democrats stage walkout. Thousands protest in Ohio. In Indiana, Governor Mitch Daniels signaled this afternoon that he was ready to drop the so-called right-to-work bill after only three of the state's 40 House Democrats showed up this morning. That's according to the Indianapolis Star. The rest were reportedly on their way to Illinois and Kentucky, stopping the legislative process in its tracks by denying their chamber the 67 members required for a quorum. Mitch Daniels told reporters he thought the Democrats would return to work if the bill dies. As in Wisconsin and Ohio, the Democrats in Indiana are protesting legislation that critics call a bid to eliminate unions by eroding collective bargaining. The so-called right-to-work bill would keep companies and unions from negotiating contracts that required non-union members to pay representation fees. Now, that was something that always bugged me when once I became aware of what the union movement was. If you have a plant or a factory where not everybody's a union member, they still have to pay a fee for the benefits negotiated by the union itself, which is only fair. I mean, this is a part that drives me crazy. This is where the right wingers swoop down and say, "See, you're forcing them to become union members." No, that's not it at all. But that's how they frame it. I'm so sick of hearing Republicans frame stuff they don't have a clue about. Oh, by the way, did you know that Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck, and Rush Limbaugh are all members of a union? Did you know that? The same union I'm a member of. Did you know that? Huh? And they get their health insurance through that union, unless they have a policy with somebody else, which would be kind of stupid, because that's what our dues pay for. Partly. So, you know, when you hear Beck and Hannity and Limbaugh and the rest of these cockroaches dumping on unions, you know, call them up and just say, wait a minute. You know, this 25-cent radio talk show host, Mike Malloy, says you're a member of a union. Are you or aren't you? Oh, Jesus God. Where are we? Arnold is in Durham, North Carolina. Hey, Arnold. Arnold.
Mike Malloy, my brother. How you doing?
I'm all right. I'm all right. How are you?
I don't know. What do you think? The Fraternal Order of Everlasting Liars like Glenn Beck and... you think they're going to admit to the American people that they belong to a union? Come on, man. Just
well,
But
you know, Arnold, whether they admit it or not, they are members. You know, it's more of that filthy hypocrisy of these pigs that I just hate. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like you identified tonight of the criminals, the world criminals that they are, the thieves that they are. Oh my God, it just makes me sick. But Mike, I'm telling you, this is. I mean, all last week I sat there and watched it on TV as the Egyptians came into the streets. I said, oh man, I love this. And I'm sitting there dying with envy and almost like a jealous rage. I said, many times, me and my Lord said, what's going to take to get the American people into the streets? What's it going to take to get the American people in the streets? And now here we see it. Wisconsin, never thought this would be the thing to bring with the union rights and human rights, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Never thought it would be something that simple that would bring them out. I thought it would be like, you know, somebody to get the guillotine and clean it up and start, you know, anybody making over $500,000 a year, just go ahead and start whacking. Because this is getting crazy in this country, man.
Yeah.
Did I hear you tell a guy, congratulations, but they got a new mayor in Chicago?
Yeah, it's Rahm Emanuel. Obama's former chief of staff.
Obama, old bulldog, the one the Republicans swore they were so scared of. He may turn out to be such a little.
I don't know why they were scared of him. He was as much a Republican as they were.
Yeah, thank you. I couldn't see anything he did to make them scared, you know.
Rahm Emanuel, you know, he's history as far as I'm concerned, but he was probably the worst guy that Obama could have had during the first couple of years of his presidency. I almost said pregnancy. During the first couple of years of his presidency, you know, you have somebody like Rahm Emanuel who was a big backer of the Blue Dog Democrats. He wanted Democrats who wouldn't be progressive or liberal. He just wanted, you know, he wanted people he could control. I don't like Rahm Emanuel, never will.
I can't understand, Mike, why the national Democrats, the Congress and Senate, not running to places like Ohio, Wisconsin, supporting those local state Democrats, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a perfect opportunity for them to come up there and say, listen, now we can win the election back. We can do a lot of things together. We get the people's attention. But they won't do it. They won't make that kind of.
Well, you know what you said. What you said about being surprised that it was a labor issue that has sparked the interest of so many people in this country. I realize the guy on right before you, Dave, said that a lot of people are not aware of what's going on in Madison. But, you know, I don't know that it's so much a union issue as the fact that was just a trigger. People are just tired. They're just tired of seeing everything that they worked for, their parents worked for, their grandparents worked for, being taken away by these predatory sons of bitches that are, you know, these millionaires and billionaires, these capitalist thugs. They're tired of it. They're just tired of it, Arnold. And, you know, you never know what's going to spark a revolution. You never know what little thing is going to make people go, okay, that's enough. You know, that was the straw that broke the camel's back. That was enough. And I just hope, and I mean this, I hope that this is the spark that wakes up the American people, that if we don't do something, it's all over. And we're all going to be serfs. We're going to be working, you know, for the kind of wages they pay people in Vietnam. I'm sick of it. I'm tired of it. Hey, Arnold, I got to leave there, man. We got a break, all right?
All right, brother. We'll talk to you later on.
Thanks for checking in, pal. Stay in touch. Stay in touch. We've got to take a break. We'll be back for the right after this. Where's our music? Do we have music tonight? Oh, there it is.
Your faith in me, then you pass the tray while the choir's singing. Mirror my God to thee. Step in the line. Can you spare a dime? I heard him say, step right on up.
This is our moment.
Just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Christopher Keller. His message, the tax base in this country has been destroyed over the past 30 years, and the country will be bankrupt in another 30. Wages have been depressed with shrinking private sector union membership, and jobs have been sent overseas. All this further shrinks the tax base. What is happening in Wisconsin is unfortunate, but inevitable. Christopher, thanks for the sponsorship. Coming up next hour, a couple of things. The New York Times talking about how union bonds between people in Wisconsin beginning to fray. You know, this is always what the corporatists, the capitalists try to do. Pit workers against each other. This is the oldest trick in the book, and they're doing it now. So the Times has something about this. Also, Daily Finance, which is an AOL property, dailyfinance.com, and they're talking about how this could be the end of labor unions. And I have a feeling that I'm going to go off on a tear on this next hour, so stick around. Will is in...
Oh, right on time, dude. I'm sitting here dying and shit, and you said the best thing I could possibly heard.
Yeah, what's that?
The Nazis are back.
Oh, yeah?
Isn't that what you were just saying?
The Nazis...
I've been screaming it for a while.
Yeah, sure.
Straight, no, dude. I mean, the Bush family and their hookups and
right.
The team comes down again. I've been screaming FUW, Freedom Underwear, for a long time. I got this stupid brain-damaged dude's revolution going on that I can't even do because I don't know technology until like 2 weeks ago, and then I almost get everybody screwed out of the world and then the way the world's set up and the money systems and all that because I killed them on the computer safety thing being an idiot. So I'm pretty sure I'm almost done, man, because I'm not sure anybody else even saw it. Just my friends. I screwed everybody I know. Dude, this has really been a crappy trip. I thought there was a killer revolution going on, man. I'm throwing peace and love as hard as I can and dying by myself. And I think I give up, man. I'm not sure. How you doing?
Oh, I'm just fine, Will. I'm just trying to navigate through the miasma here and, you know, get to the other side. I'm just trying to get through this life and make it onto the next. You know what I'm saying? Will, thanks, man. I appreciate it. Not sure what you said, but I appreciate the hell out of it. I really do. Yow. Love it. All right, Will. Will's my man. Will definitely is my man. I love it, Will. Bless you. Rick is in Hayward, California, listening to Green 960. Hey, Rick.
Hello.
Hey.
Took a step back about the Koch brothers.
Yeah.
And was trying to remember, didn't they originally were aimed at the energy legislation and health care was just
Oh, yeah.
Trial run?
They were part of an organization put together to, they spent millions to try to destroy any kind of clean air legislation or global warming efforts at curtailing carbon dioxide emissions in the atmosphere. I mean, these are world class murderers. I mean, if these guys had their way, millions of people would drop like flies. This is what they do. And a matter of fact, millions already have, because the Koch family supported the development of the industrial power of the Soviet Union. Just like the Bushes were instrumental in the rise of Hitler. They're evil sons of bitches who should be run off the planet. If there was a way to put them on a rocket ship and, you know, aim it for Arcturus or someplace and just light the son of a bitch and let it go off, you know, send these people away from here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They're really bad people, Rick. Yes.
Weren't they specifically doing the teabag, supporting the teabag thing for, you know, to fight the cap and trade at first? And was the healthcare thing, do you think that was sort of a surprise success, that they didn't, it was a trial run or something?
I wouldn't be surprised. You know, the teabaggers are kind of brain dead. They were easily manipulated. And, you know, you can do pretty much anything you want to do when you have billions and billions of dollars, and you can play games with people's heads, and you can set up phony little companies and little front organizations, and then set about undermining everything that might still be decent about this country. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the Koch brothers are evil. I wouldn't be surprised if the whole health reform attempt at health reform and all that crap. When was it? Just a year ago or a year and a half ago? Remember all those town hall meetings where people were screaming and frothing at the mouth? All white people, all middle-aged to older white people screaming like a bunch of goddamn banshees. I never saw anything like that in my life. And that was all funded, every single bit of it funded by these vampires. Hey, listen, I got to leave there, Rick. We're just about out of time. Thanks, man. We'll talk again, all right? All right. Like I said, next hour, the prediction and the discussion about whether or not what's happening in Wisconsin could be the end of labor unions, and the fact that union brothers and sisters in these kinds of situations tend to, with people out of work and families struggling and nobody knowing where their next paycheck is coming from, it tends, and the capitalists, the pigs know this. They know that eventually people start clawing at each other because, you know, we live right next door to each other. These billionaires and millionaires, they live in pressurized chambers somewhere in the deepest depths of hell. So they feel immune. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. Assembly. sometimes you can use that interchangeably with freedom of association. That's the individual right to come together and collectively express, promote, pursue, and defend common interests. Freedom of assembly. Guaranteed by the Constitution of the United States, it's interpreted to mean both the freedom to assemble and the freedom to join an association. Hey, welcome back. This is the Molloy Show. And this hour is sponsored by a fellow traveler. He or she will remain anonymous, but the message says, please visit carlsagan.com and simply be still and listen for a moment. It is in the process of preparing that our focus for hope can be created. Signed, peace, a fellow traveler. So do what the fellow traveler is asking you to do. Go to carlsagan.com and simply be still and listen for a moment. As we've been talking about, oh my God, not just tonight, but over the past several days, what is going on here is an attempt to put what is primarily the last nail in the coffin of the union movement in this country, collective bargaining, the right of free association, the right of free assembly. This is the knife. This is the dagger to the heart. And Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker has been chosen by the Koch brothers to commit this act of murder. He's not alone. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and this freak in Ohio, John Kasich, they all are on the same page. It is time to destroy. And the labor movement, this is really heartbreaking to me, aside from the fact that it makes me, it's truly, it makes me want to pick up the nearest blunt instrument and take to the streets, which may happen. It has happened in the history of this country repeatedly, where the working class, after being exploited, treated like dirt, stomped on, finally said enough. And, of course, so many members of the working class, in their attempts to organize, were shot down in cold blood by hired goons and thugs and bastards and sons of bitches put on the street with guns by the capitalists. Henry Ford was one of the leading murderers in that respect. So there's been a lot of bloodshed in the hills of Appalachia, in the streets of Detroit and Chicago. Hell, all over the South. Out West. A lot of bloodshed by men and women who said, look, we have a right to form an association and then demand certain rights from the capitalists who see us as nothing. We are nothing. We are dirt. We are not dirt. We're human beings. We work in order to support our families. So we are going to get together and we are going to form a union. We're going to collectively bargain. If you want your factory to run, you will pay us a living wage. Here's what you will pay us. If you make a profit, you will pay us more of a living wage. And why shouldn't you? You, Mr. Capitalist, are not on the shop floor. You are not doing the work. We are doing the work. We are the ones that get black lung disease. We are the ones that breathe in all the lint in the textile mills. We are the ones that are exposed to toxic chemicals. We are the ones who drop dead 20 years before you do, you miserable son of a bitch, because you don't work. So now, the Koch brothers, among others, God, would I like to have about 20 minutes alone with them? Wouldn't you? Wouldn't you? Woo! Lord have mercy. Now the Koch brothers, they have found their perfect little droid. Governor Scott Walker. They found the perfect issue. Well, they're overpaid. Their pensions are too big. And you know what? It's starting, the working class is fracturing, started to fracture of this issue, which shouldn't come as a surprise. I would venture that 80% of Americans don't have a goddamn clue as to what the labor movement has done. Not a clue. Not a single thought or idea. And it's not their fault. I mean, I don't fault entirely the average American who would rather watch Dancing with the Stars or Glee or whatever the current dollop of crap that's presented on the networks every night so that people just don't think. I fault the education system. Not the teachers. The teachers do what the teachers do. I'm talking about the education system. The legislators who decide what the curriculum is going to be. It's not school teachers that decide that. It's boards of education. And how do they decide it? Well, how much money do they have? Well, you know, what conservative religious nutbag is now sitting on the board? What conservative religious nutbag group of nutbags, they practice free association, is destroying public education? You see how this goes. So the fact that the average American doesn't have a clue as to what the union movement has done and how important it is, even though only 8% of the workforce is still unionized, rests on the fact that at some point, I guess in the 70s or 80s, a decision was made, well, let's stop teaching American history to American children. Let's just stop. Because after all, we have about a 40-year agenda here, at the end of which we are going to have complete control of everything in this putrid goddamn country. We are going to reduce this country to a nation of 300 million serfs who will do exactly what we tell them to do. We're going to lower their standard of living. We're going to take everything we can get out of them. Oh, and we're also going to bring into existence something called a Tea Party movement, a reactionary bunch of lard asses who don't have a clue what they are destroying. But they are going to be useful idiots as we move this country directly into fascism and then into neo-feudalism. And here we are. Here we are. New York Times, or no, not New York Times, I'll get to that in a second, but the Daily Finance at AOL. Remember, AOL News is extreme right-wing. But they have a thing up, beyond Wisconsin, this could be the end of labor unions. It's almost gleeful. Beyond Wisconsin, this could be the end of labor unions. Yay! The article says, with the efforts in Wisconsin and some other states to eliminate or severely limit collective bargaining for public employees, the entire labor union movement in the U.S. is threatened. With a potential starvation of funds and a sharp drop in membership, that could have a big impact on labor's voice on everything from the value of China's currency to new laws dealing with worker protections. Wow, who'd have thunk it, huh? Labor unions, little old 8% of the workforce that is still organized, the private workforce, with that much power? Wow. The director of the Douglas Fraser Center for Workplace Issues and Labor at Wayne State University in Detroit said, quote, this is a direct assault on the institutional viability of labor unions. This isn't an effort to legislate changes in benefits. This is an effort to rewrite the collective bargaining laws. Rewrite them, I might add, in a manner that eliminates them. We'll be right back.
Redefining anger management.
It's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. So as experts are saying, what the Koch brothers and the capitalists and the fascists in this country are doing, and they're working through, in this particular case, Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, would be to end collective bargaining. End it. It's not an attempt. You know, this business about the state is in financial trouble. This is the smokescreen. This is the lie. This is simply not true. But this is what they have decided to use as the red herring to make it appear as though they're doing something good for the people of the state of Wisconsin. What they are doing is, in fact, nullifying the First Amendment. Now, granted, the phrase freedom of association doesn't appear in the Constitution. But the First Amendment protects the right to peacefully assemble. And the Supreme Court has recognized in two separate types of association that are constitutionally protected. First, intimate association. That's protected as an aspect of the right of privacy. This is where Roe v. Wade comes from. And second, expressive association, protected as an aspect of the First Amendment's protection of free speech. This is where union membership comes from. The right to peacefully assemble. This is where freedom of association, not union membership, but this is where freedom of association has its genesis, in the First Amendment. What the Koch brothers, what the right wing in this country is attempting, is the destruction of that part of the First Amendment. I mean, it is that crazed. Now, for the people who are listening right now saying, well, you're really stretching the First Amendment. I'm not stretching it any further than people who stretch the Second Amendment with its garbled language to mean that people have a right to keep fully automatic weapons of war in their hallway closet. So anyone who tells you that the First Amendment does not protect union membership, they're either a goddamn liar or they are working a right-wing agenda that's been fed to them by scum like Rush Limbaugh and scum like Beck and the rest of these pigs, and financed, of course, by filth, absolute anti-American filth like the Koch brothers. So Scott Walker has proposed a plan that would end collective bargaining for the majority of the state municipal workers in his state. No more collective bargaining on retirement pay, health care benefits. And he also wants to require public sector unions to be recertified on an annual basis. In other words, this would be the same thing. You have a right to vote, right? What if you had some fascist bastard, and this is coming. Trust me, this is coming. A fascist capitalist bastard that got a law passed that said you want to vote, you have to register every year. Every year you have to go register to vote. And if you missed a year, that's it. You don't vote that year. Your vote would be meaningless at that point anyway. But how would that feel? This is what the unions are being told. This is what this bastard Scott Walker wants done in Wisconsin. That unions have to be recertified. They have to be revoted into existence every year. Union membership has to be recertified every year. Think about it. You Second Amendment freaks out there, what if you were told every single year you had to apply for a new gun permit? Huh? This psycho, yes, he's a psycho, John Kasich, the governor of Ohio. Ohio. You know, you would expect the destruction of the union movement here in the South, where it was very effective. Very little of the South, if any of it, that's unionized. But Ohio? Wisconsin? Michigan? New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Indiana? Are you kidding me? This is the result of the capitalists deciding, look, why should we pay these dumbass Americans $35 an hour to make our junk? We can rip up the factories, move it to Mexico, move it to Vietnam, move it to China, where we can pay 80 cents an hour to make our junk. And then we'll sell it back to these dumb bastards in the United States. Of course, they won't have any money to buy anything. Oops, what are we going to do? Well, we'll figure out something. Ohio is holding hearings on a bill that would eliminate all collective bargaining for state workers. New Jersey, the governor there, this obese bastard Chris Christie, who will eat anything that's not nailed down, apparently, and does, has introduced measures to require teachers to pay more for retirement and health benefits and proposed ending teacher tenure. This is where we're going. This is where we're going. You understand? Hold on to your ass, truth seekers, because this is what the Republicans are doing.
Marion Brown. Well, I'm gonna sleep in a union coffin. I'm gonna sleep in a union coffin. Way over in that union burying ground. Every new grave brings a thousand new ones. Every new grave.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
Things got rough. 25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by a fellow traveler. And the message from the fellow traveler is, please visit carlsagan.com. Fellow traveler adds, and simply be still and listen for a moment. It is in the process of preparing that our focus for hope can be created. Peace, a fellow traveler. Thank you, fellow traveler. The destruction of the union movement continues apace, which means the destruction of the working class in this country, the destruction of everything that has benefited and created the middle class in this country. It is coming to an end. Prepare yourself for it. There's two ways you can prepare. You can prepare by saying, no, you're not going to let it happen. Now, that requires that you get very active and perhaps have to take to the streets and put your body into the gears of the machine to actually say, no, goddammit, you've taken everything, capitalism, corporate America, that you can take from me. You've taken my home. You've screwed up my kids' education. You've turned me into some kind of a robot. You deny me this. You stop me from doing that. You move the jobs overseas. You initiate wars of opportunity where my brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles are murdered. You son of a bitch. No! That's one way. The other way is to accept it. Gear everything down. Prepare yourself for it. If you're thinking of having a kid, think about it. Think about it. Think about what you're going to bring your child into. Give it some serious thought. I'm not saying don't have a child, but just consider. Consider the kind of world. I think about this all the time. I have a 6.5-year-old child. I think about all the people that I know of. None of my friends have small children. Not my peer group. Hell no. But I think about all the people that I know. I look at the parents at my daughter's school, and I think, how are you preparing your 6-year-old for what's coming? I'm not sure how to do it. I really am not. So, two ways to react to the destruction of the middle class. Fight or don't. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? The guy I was quoting, Merrick Masters, director of the Douglas Frazier Center for Workplace Issues and Labor at Wayne State University in Detroit, says they that would be that fascists, the capitalists, the corporatists have lit a spark that I think is going to spread. Now, a lot of people just simply don't understand what the public unions are all about. And this is one of the parts that most people don't understand is that the public sector unions, according to Daniel Kornfield, a professor at Vanderbilt University, the public sector unions played a significant role in narrowing any wage gaps that exist between races and genders because of who they represent. The dismantling, he says, of collective bargaining in the public sector could exacerbate the gender gap and the race gap on pay. This is a side benefit for these capitalist sons of bitches. They would be pitting men against women, black against white. Kornfield notes that the rise of public sector unions in the 1960s was closely associated with two other trends: the, at the time, burgeoning women's movement and the civil rights movement. Kornfield also points out that weakening organized labor could also hurt the wages for the bulk of workers who are now employed in companies that don't have unions. That's because, and this is the part that I just wonder, how could we be this stupid? It's because non-unionized companies often will match union benefits in an effort to keep union representation out of their companies. Without the union model, according to this expert, the wages of the 90% of the labor force that's not unionized could be threatened. This is the part that I don't get. How do people not understand that this miserable 8 or 9% of the public or the private workforce that's still unionized determines what the other 92% of organized workers make just by their presence? You destroy the union and you destroy that overarching guarantee that other companies are going to pay comparable wages. And then what happens? You think these predatory capitalist organizations are going to say, oh, okay, well, the unions are gone. Let's continue to pay decent wages. Let's continue to provide some sort of health insurance. Let's continue to put a little bit aside for the workers in a retirement fund. Let's continue to support their 401ks. Do you honestly think that's going to happen? Are you that goddamn stupid? No, of course you're not. So therefore, you understand what the obvious goal is here. You understand it, don't you? Of course you do. So what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Well, Mike, I'm not going to do anything. I'm retired. What about the other people in your family? What about the people, your grandchildren, your nieces and nephews, your grandnieces and nephews? What about them? What are you going to do? You, Mr. and Mrs. America, you were handed something because of all the people who put their blood on the streets in the 1890s and the 1910s and the 1920s and 30s and 40s and 50s. And because of their blood on the street, you got a benefit. That's why you're able to retire. That's why you have a pension if you have one. That's why you have unemployment if you're not working. That's why your kid goes to a public school. So what are you going to do now that it's being destroyed? Doesn't affect me, Mike. I'm not working anymore. I'm retired. So what are you going to do? You got two choices: fight or don't fight. What are you going to do? And you can define and interpret and give definition to the word fight any way you want to. I know what I think of when I think of fight. I think of fight. But all those people who were willing to have their heads cracked open, were willing to put their bodies on the line, who died struggling for worker rights in this country. Do you not know about this? Do you not understand what was done to make sure that you could be in the so-called middle class? Where do you think you got the wherewithal to buy the house that you live in?
Well, Mike, I saved the money, made a down payment.
How did you save the money? You don't get it, do you? Maybe you do. So what are you going to do? You've got two choices. Fight or don't fight. What are you going to do? It's none of my business. I'm just curious. I'm an American like you are. I just wonder. I goddamn well know what I'm going to do. What about you? What are you going to do? New York Times, in their inimitable style, article out today, I think it's today. Union bonds in Wisconsin begin to fray. Oh, that's the headline. Janesville, Wisconsin. Rich Hahan worked at the General Motors plant here until it closed about 2 years ago. He moved to Detroit to take another GM job while his wife and children stayed here. But then the automaker cut more jobs. So Mr. Hahan, 50, found himself back in Janesville, collecting unemployment for a time and watching as the city's industrial base seemed to crumble away. Among the top five employers here now in Janesville are the county, the schools, and the city. And that was enough to make Mr. Hahan, a union man from a union town, a supporter of Governor Scott Walker's sweeping proposal to cut the benefits and collective bargaining rights of public workers in Wisconsin. Rich says he still believes in unions, but he thinks those in the public sector lead to wasteful spending because of what he sees as lavish benefits and endless negotiations. Something, he said, needs to be done, and quickly. So what does Mr. Hahan do? What does Rich do? He takes a knife and drags it across his own throat. And while he's bleeding all over the goddamn street, he votes for a Republican governor. Guess what, Rich? Your ass is toast, and so is your wife, and so are your children. And if you really think that supporting a governor that's trying to destroy the public unions is going to get your job back, it's astonishing that you would think that. Unbelievable. But you do, don't you, Rich?
Everything is gonna be all right. Saw the boss come a-walking down along the factory line, saying, boys, we have to tighten up our belts. But he didn't look any thinner than he did a year ago, and I wonder just how hungry that man felt. He knows it ain't hard to get along with somebody else's troubles. They don't make him lose any sleep at night.
Before the hour. So in Wisconsin, the plan is working just fine, turning formerly middle-class American against still middle-class American, but soon to be formerly middle-class American. So New York Times uses this guy, Rich Hahan, unemployed. Used to work at General Motors in Janesville, Wisconsin. Lost his job. Moved to Detroit. Lost his job. As New York Times points out, across the state, residents like Mr. Hahan have fumed in recent years as tens of thousands of manufacturing jobs have vanished. And some of the state's best-known corporations have pressured workers to accept benefit cuts. Remember the Harley-Davidson thing we talked about? Remember Mercury Marine? Remember we talked about that months ago? where the company said to workers, unionized workers, either cut your benefits package, you rat bastards, or we're going to move out of the state. Remember that? Remember the blackmail? And we talked about it. And now this toy punk-ass governor is doing the same thing to the public service workers or the public sector workers. So Mr. Hayhan, rich, they're using, Times using example, he's all pissed off. Who's he pissed off at? The people who caused this? The capitalists? The corporatists? The rich bastards? The mega wealthy? No, he's not. His anger has been redirected by swine like Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity, who are paid tens of millions of dollars a year to redirect poor old Rich's attention. And haven't they done a great job? Workers pitted against one another, finding it hard to feel sympathy or offer solidarity when their own jobs and benefits and pensions have been taken from them, right? Outside of Madison, Wisconsin, according to the Times, many people said that public workers needed to share in the sacrifice that their families have been forced to make. Why have their families been forced to make it? See what I just said 30 seconds ago. Listen to this. This is the way the Times does it. Here in Janesville, a city of about 60,000, an hour southwest of Madison, Crystal Watkins, a preschool teacher at a Lutheran church, said she was paid less than public school teachers and got fewer benefits. "I don't have any of that," she said. "But I'm there every day because I love the kids. This isn't fair." Really? In Palmyra, a small village bounded by farmland and forest, Mary Kay Horder remembered how her husband's Chevy dealership had teetered on the brink of closing after General Motors declared bankruptcy, for which she blamed the unions. You see? Not decisions made in the boardrooms. Oh, no, 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 not at all, Mary Kay, right? Not the executive decisions. Why would you blame them? Blame the unions. Who told you to do that, Mary Kay? Who told you to blame the unions? The unions that gave your husband such an excellent job until the bosses, the corporatists, the capitalists said to your husband, "Here's a knife, go cut your own throat." Which Mary Kay Horder seems very willing to do because she blames the unions. Mrs. Horder said she was forced to work more hours as an occupational therapist, but had not seen a raise or any retirement contributions from her employer for the last 2 years. "I don't get a bargain in my job," she said. Right, Mary Kay. It's the union's fault, right? Of course it is. And in nearby Whitewater, Wisconsin, a working-class city of 15,000 that is home to a public university, Dave Bergman, the owner of a bar, was tending it himself on Sunday. He's been forced to cut staff and work 7 days a week. Mr. Bergman says, "There are a lot of people out of work right now that would take a job without a union." Exactly, Mr. Bergman, exactly. And you're one of them, aren't you? Exactly. Union leaders have said they would accept the financial terms of this punk-ass governor's proposal. They'll accept it. But the more controversial provisions would strip public employees of collective bargaining rights, and the unions are saying no. In Whitewater, Wisconsin, Ben Penwell, a lawyer whose wife is a public employee, said he saw no reason to strip away workers' bargaining rights if they had agreed to benefit cuts. Mr. Penwell, the lawyer, says, quote, "They're willing to do what's necessary fiscally without giving up rights in the future." But others suggested that unions had perhaps outlived their usefulness. There you go. Carrie Fox, who works at a billboard advertising company, says she hoped that the battle would encourage other governors to rein in public and private sector unions. Yes, rein them in! Carrie Fox says, quote, "I know there was a point for unions back in the day because people were being abused, but now there's workers' rights.
There's laws that protect us. End quote. Carrie. Jesus. God, Carrie. How long do you think those laws you're talking about will remain in effect when the unions are gone? And there you have it. That's why Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity and the rest of these devils are paid millions of dollars a year to get people like Kerry Fox to say, I know there was a point for unions back in the day because people were being abused, but now there's workers' rights. There's laws that protect us. I'll see you tomorrow. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.